Neo Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. We're about to get started with the local edition, but before we do, I want to give you this update on the local weather forecast for our listening area. Flash flood warning for Sullivan County has been expanded to include more areas, and this warning goes until 8 tonight. This warning covers central Sullivan County. That includes Monticello, Liberty, Fallsburg, Neversink, South Fallsburg, Woodridge, Lock Sheldrake, Hurleyville, Woodburn, Harris, Grahamsville, Hasbrook, Bradley, and Ferndale. The earlier warning covered mainly west central Sullivan County, including Jeffersonville, Youngsville, and Swan Lake. That warning goes until 7:30. Flooding of low-lying areas is possible due to thunderstorms. You want to keep an eye on conditions and take precautions and never attempt to drive through flooded roadways. This chance of showers continues tonight through the overnight with a low down to 63, and there's a chance of thunderstorms again at least into the day tomorrow, with a high of 75. This is Radio Catskill. And live from Radio Catskill's studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up on the program, delegates for the Democrats who come from New York State, they've all endorsed Kamala Harris for president. We talked to one of those delegates coming up in the second half of the program. Plus, Wayne County is getting a new $11 million transportation facility that will house 37 buses. Plus, an update on Camp FIMFO. And some analysis on proposed projects that are very big and local planning boards that are very small. But first, we continue coverage of local reaction to the planned closure of Sullivan Correctional Facility in Woodburn. New York State Senator Peter Oberacker, representing the 51st Senate District, joined local officials at a rally earlier today at the Woodburn Firehouse to oppose the planned closure that's currently scheduled for November 6th. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rabayo has more.
Lack of planning creates undue economic hardship and potentially dangerous situations. 90 days. 90 days to close is totally inadequate, and it's not only unfair to the families who now face economic uncertainty, but from all the tentacles that come out from that. This one brief moment, 90 days to re-register your children in school, 90 days to find a new doctor, 90 days to find a new dentist, 90 days to put your life back together is simply not long enough. If the governor believes changes are needed, and instead of haphazardly closing, we should have a sound plan and develop how to fix it with adequate notice given to all those affected and a plan to help mitigate any negative impact on the local communities. As was previously said, we're talking about our local convenience stores, our laundries, our restaurants. All the services that are provided will be dramatically impacted with the closing of this facility. Rehousing inmates, existing inmates, will create a prison overflow, overcrowding, lack of mental health services. I was up and toured the facility at Sullivan today. One of the best mental health services we have in docs, and yet it's scheduled to close. It's dangerous. These conditions of relocating and are creating potentially dangerous situations for our COs, our correctional officers, and our communities. Governor Hochul and the extreme liberal left are to blame for this, plain and simple. These closings represent another disturbing extension of the weak on crime policies coming out of Albany. Dangerous bail laws, putting criminals back on the streets, the failure to back our law enforcement, and now hastily closing prisons. I was told that one of the reasons why we're looking at closing is because the population is down. Can any of you look me in the face and say, are you surprised that that is happening with our bail reform? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Listen, make no mistake. A closing of a prison is not a sign of less crime, as some would insist. It's all part of a growing, disturbing anti-law and order pro-criminal agenda. Bar none. If it's a financial issue, I sit on a couple of key committees. One is labor. The other is budget and finance. I found out about the closing here in Sullivan through a tweet. I wasn't even afforded a phone call as the highest ranking legislator in Sullivan County, and something that would be affecting my 51st Senate district. I wasn't even afforded a phone call before I had to find out in a tweet. Totally unacceptable on all levels, on all sides of the aisle, no matter what your party affiliation is. Respect has gone out the door, in my opinion. If it is a financial issue, and I don't know this because I'm still waiting to hear something from our governor or a representative thereof or anything from the second floor. If it is a financial issue, if the governor can find $2.4 billion in this budget to house illegal immigrants, I think we could find a couple hundred million to keep this facility open. So plain and simple, folks, I'm saying this. I'm calling on Governor Hochul to reverse her disastrous position and put the safety of our New Yorkers and our COs and hardworking women and men of our correctional system first.
Bolsburg Supervisor Michael Ben-Simon, who attended the rally, stated that the impact of the closure will be deeply felt.
This is turned into a disaster for the town of Fallsburg and for the community as a whole. All the 371 employees at the Sullivan facility are going to be greatly affected by this closure. These folks are integral parts of our community, part of the fabric of our society, and we don't want to see them or their family go. This happening exactly about a month before the school year is going to cause a tremendous amount of upheaval for these families.
Nadia Reich, chair of the Sullivan County Legislature, shared that her family has experienced prison closures before and expressed her sympathy for the affected correction officers.
It's not only impacting Fallsburg, but it's impacting the entire county. As the wife of a retired state corrections officer, Mid Orange was one of the first ones to close. We had a year back then. And in that year, we scrambled. My husband went to Sullivan. Then he went to Woodburn, went to Otisville, went back to Woodburn, after which he retired after 25 years, thankfully. But I stand here in support of you. We all support you, and we will do whatever we can to make our voices heard in Albany. This is not the right thing to do.
And Alicia McKenneth, single mother and corrections officer with 9 years at Sullivan Correctional Facility, says she's uncertain about her future. She expressed concerns about managing her son's education as he's a special needs student.
My son can't go into any school district. He has to go into a BOCES or a specialized school. And he just got into Liberty BOCES, and even those, the programs, he can't slide into any program. Programs are filled up because there's so many kids that need help.
How did you find out? Did you find out like everyone else?
I found out like everybody else. I got an email at 10:30. Actually, my coworker called me and told me that we were closing. And then after I got the email.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts now? What are your plans?
To be honest, I don't have a plan. It's kind of up in the air. I'm trying to figure out where I'll be placed. And then I go from there. I can't make plans.
Yeah.
Too far. We don't have enough time. 90 days is not, technically 80 something days is not enough time.
And have they told you yet exactly what's going to happen? Or?
Absolutely not. August 6th, Albany is supposed to come and let us know, give us a packet. And again, not enough time because August, September, October, November, 3 months, by and August. He starts school in September 9th. So it's not an easy transition. And a lot of us have kids. A lot of us have different responsibilities that we have to take care of. A lot of people move close to be closer to the jail. So it's hard.
Yeah.
Sullivan County legislatures and sheriff's office were present at the rally, said they were assisted to place corrections officers the best to their ability. They also vowed to continue urging Governor Kathy Hochul to reconsider her decision. In Woodburn, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio, for that report. We also want to note that Sullivan County District Attorney Brian Connolly today released the following statement on the closure. He says, quote, "I am incensed at the recent announcement to permanently close the Docks Sullivan Correctional Facility and particularly the complete lack of notice to all the stakeholders so affected. This facility enjoys a long and proud history integral to the law enforcement community of Sullivan County. But this abrupt decision raises more questions than it answers and will undoubtedly upend the public safety, economy, and lives of those that bravely served this county. End quote from Sullivan County DA Brian Connedy. Now, for more on this story and others in our listening area, it's time for our weekly news roundup with the River Reporter. And for that, we turn to the River Reporter's own Ruby Rayner. Ruby, welcome back to the local edition.
Thanks for having me.
So we know the news about Sullivan Correctional Facility closing. We're just hearing Senator Peter Oberacker in our area talking about it today. But this isn't the only facility that was announced at the same time that's slated to close. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There is also the Great Meadow Correctional Facility in Washington County. There could be up to 5 prisons closing. So the announcement of these 2 closures, Sullivan Correctional and Great Meadow Correctional, are the first of up to 5. And that's part of a provision in Hochul's budget, the 2024-2025 executive budget, which kind of like was baked into this approval of the closure of up to 5 state correctional facilities.
And what's the reason that they give for that?
Yeah, so the biggest reason that the executive budget baked this into it, that Hochul like reference, is just over the past years, there's been a decrease in the total population in prisons, as well in the state prison like population, which is cited by the Correctional Association of New York as driven by the success of criminal justice reforms over the past 20 years. And then in addition to that, also staffing has been difficult. So in an effort to address both of those, they, you know, made the decision to approve up to 5 closures, and one of those is Sullivan Correctional.
Yeah, and so is there any particular reason why they're starting with Sullivan?
Yeah, so this was based on the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision, which is, you know, an oversight body that conducted a review of all of the operations, so 44 correctional facilities throughout the state. And the agency said in a statement that the review was based on a variety of factors, which were population, physical infrastructure, and then programming offerings at specific prison, and then how easily they could be relocated to other institutions. So it was based on that Sullivan Correctional was chosen.
Okay, and you have some details on where Sullivan ranks on those categories that docs were saying it was looking at?
Yeah, so these different parameters of population and physical infrastructure, there's some statistics that could inform why Sullivan Correctional was chosen. So 56% of medical staff positions, so 22 out of 40, were vacant as of last January, according to reports. So the facility can hold up to 560 inmates, but at one point last June, the population dropped to under 400. So that decrease in population is definitely reflected in these statistics at Sullivan Correctional. And just to give people a sense of also the staff that's associated with Sullivan Correctional, this same audit counted 385 staff members, along with 18 contractors and 27 volunteers that also will be presumably, you know, affected by this closure.
We heard, State Senator Peter Oberacker was there in Woodburn today making a press conference, giving his perspective on it. You've heard from the person who's actually running against him for the 51st State Senate District. This is Michelle Fraser, who's also a professor of criminal justice.
Yeah, that's correct. Michelle Fraser, who's running against Oberacker for that 51st State Senate seat, also spoke with us and gave us a statement and said, quote, "I understand that when prisons close due to decreases in prison populations, that means that crime is going down and communities are safer, which is what we want to see. Staffing shortages continue to be an issue that compromise the safety and well-being of the people who work there and the incarcerated population." She added that we also need to make sure that communities where prisoners have been cited are helped to transition from an incarceration economy to other economic opportunities. So she was one of the few candidates or elected officials who supported the closure of Sullivan Correctional.
You know, the first thing I thought about when I heard this news is just the fact that these correctional facilities in our region are major employers for our area. Could you talk about, the economic impact of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think in essence, it reveals that there is a dependency on it. So a lot of what we've heard from local elected officials and across has been the concern about how this will affect people who are employed by the prison and who rely on the prison for their livelihood. So I think acknowledging that and seeing that dependency around the prison and how it depends on it as a major employee is the main thing. I spoke with Jose Saldana, who served time actually in correctional facilities in the state, including 6 years at Sullivan Correctional, and he's now the director of Release Aging People in Prison Project, RAP, created and led by former and current prisoners, their family members, and advocates to end mass incarceration. And he said that he was surprised when Sullivan Correctional was picked because it is relatively small comparatively to other prisons in the state that are, three or four times bigger. And that he himself is very grateful for the closure of any prison. And similarly to Fraser, said that this was pointed towards less incarceration, but that he also doesn't rejoice in upending anyone's lives. And I'm going to read a quote because I think it's quite salient from him. "We develop a social conscience to embrace other people no matter what. I'm sympathetic that when you close down a prison, it's affecting hundreds or thousands of people. I don't like ending any families." And Saldana also spoke about kind of moving towards not having local economies that are dependent on incarceration and the employment in incarceration systems. So I think that those were definitely another thing that was pointed out by Paula Kay, who's running for New York 100 state assembly for the retiring Assemblywoman Eileen Gunther's seat. She also pointed out that the way that it was communicated towards these correctional employees wasn't in a very organized manner. There hasn't been a lot of information about where they will be transferred to and how that will impact them. So I think also the idea of how you're communicating news from a political end towards people who it's going to actually, affect their day-to-day lives and potentially their work commute or where their children go to school is something that Paula Kay pointed out as quite important in how we communicate these decisions.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, in another story, and we weren't able to get to this last week, you've got an update on Camp FIMFO, is that correct?
Yes. Well, I spoke briefly last week, but Camp FIMFO, which is the project proposed at Kittatinny Campground in Berryville, that if approved, will invest, $40+ million in transforming that campground with RV park models and other renovations, that they are now again before the planning board and that they are continuing to move through that application process. But I took a look here in this reporting, zooming out a little bit about how the process works and in general what it looks like and why there is such a large project before a planning board.
Right. So what did you find?
So a lot of times these big out-of-area applications like Camp FIMFO end up becoming, coming before very small town planning boards, like in the town of Highland. And planning boards operate based on town codes, which may or may not have necessarily anticipated the range of projects that they might have seen. They could have been written many years ago, a decade ago, if not more, and they might not have specific rules and specific laws that address whatever project is coming before them. So then that leaves the planning board, this group of people who review applications, who are appointed by the town board to make these very high impact decisions, like in this case we've seen in the reaction around Camp FIMFO, without necessarily having a comprehensive code that can guide that decision. So commercial projects might not be typical for a community can really spark controversy and drag on, like in the case of FINSO. And the reason that the planning board has this ability to make such large decisions about a project like Camp FINSO is because New York State is a home rule system. So it gives them that ability.
Right. So what exactly does that mean, home rule?
So in New York State, the home rule system allows municipalities, towns to pass laws freely as long as they don't conflict with, like, the New York State law. So New York zoning enabling laws grants the authority to decide their own planning and their own zoning. And this was a means to give residents a way to tailor their town to their, you know, unique local context in order to give them freedom and self-determination. Those were all of those intentions in making New York State a home rule and giving municipalities that power. But in practice, carrying this out can oftentimes be quite difficult and end up being a very, very long process, particularly if you are a small town with limited resources.
Yeah, and what are you finding about small towns in all of this?
Yeah, I think that the Camp FINSO project is revealing in that, you know, there's big-time lobbyists, which is in the case of Camp FINSO. Their representatives of their application are employed by Brown and Weinraub, which was the state's top lobbyist in 2022 and 2023, bringing in, you know, lump sums of $15.5 million and $21.15 million, respectively, in those 2 years. And they're representing a project to a planning board that is made up of volunteers. They are not paid. And that operate, you know, on a very, the town of Highland operates on a very small budget, whereas, you know, the Camp FINSO applicant, which is a subsidiary of Sun Communities, you know, this is a very large publicly traded real estate trust that invests in manufactured housing communities. And, you know, they've had revenues. Their revenue was $1.3 billion in 2020. And for the first quarter of 2024, it's nearly $700 million. So you can see the discrepancy in, like, the two different resources of these, you know, of the applicant versus the planning board that's reviewing this application.
Yeah, is this too much for local planning boards? I mean, that you're looking at the big picture here. I mean, can you say that for sure that, you know, the size and the scopes of these projects and where they land at a local planning board, is that too much? Does something else need to be done?
I mean, I think it's certainly a lot of pressure. And I think that's what I have observed and what has been said, that it's difficult and that it's a lot of work. Planning board members have said they spent, you know, hundreds of volunteer hours. So they're definitely, it seems like it is a time-consuming ask.
Yeah, and is there any potential solutions to this on the horizon? Anybody suggesting, hey, we could try this or we could try that? Is there anything at the state level being determined about this?
Not necessarily that I know, but I mean, one of the ways that just in general towns deal with their town code being up to date is through their comprehensive plans, which is not necessarily a solution that happens typically every 10 years, their 10-year comprehensive plans. But those allow towns to kind of discuss and talk about and address developments, you know, in society, in their world, and then address those through changes of the town code, which is happening in Highland right now. They're rewriting, which is also, though, not a free process. It costs money for the town to do that. So I think it's like a heavy ask, and it definitely seems to be, in practice, quite difficult.
All right, and I know that you were at the Board of Supervisors meeting for Berlin Township. This includes Beech Lake. What can you tell me?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick update there. So the landscape architect presented a preliminary land development plan for the new Wayne County Transportation Facility at the Berlin Township Board of Supervisors meeting. So the facility will be constructed near the recycling center, on Volunteer Drive, and as proposed, it will provide a central location for 37 buses belonging to Wayne County. The space will also include a bus wash and large parking garage, offices, and parking for staff. And the funding for this project, this $11 million project, will come from both state and federal sources, and it's targeted to be open for bids in late summer with construction to begin this fall or next spring. And the Berlin supervisor will vote on the project contingent upon approval by the town engineer.
All right. Well, Ruby, thanks for taking the time to go over all this with us.
Thanks so much.
And finally, tonight, some presidential election news. Following President Joe Biden's withdrawal from the 2024 presidential race, New York's delegates to the Democratic National Convention met and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris for the Democratic nomination for president. This morning, Tim Bruno spoke to one of those delegates who attended the virtual meeting, Ann Hart, who chairs the Sullivan County Democratic Committee.
Well, it was a great meeting. Almost all the delegates were there. We heard from, of course, Governor Hochul and State Party Chair Jay Jacobs and various other members of the party. And the motion was actually ended up being seconded to endorse her. All hands were up on the Zoom. It was a very exciting meeting. People are very excited to, you know, to get out there and work for Vice President Harris. And it was an exciting meeting and a great, wonderful meeting.
And it seems that Ms. Harris has announced she's collected enough delegate pledges across the country to become the Democratic Party's presumptive nominee, with the New York delegates among them. More and more Democrats are uniting around Harris. Do you expect this to continue?
I do. I think that we have a mission this year, and we will work in a united fashion to accomplish that mission, which is to make sure that Donald Trump isn't returned to the White House. And I think that's a unifying mission among Democrats and others who don't like his last presidency.
Some delegates have said, and some other political leaders have said, that they've been frustrated with the lack of competition around who would replace President Biden. Do you have that same concern at all, or what do you say to those folks about their perceived lack of competition or perhaps an anointing of her as the presumptive nominee?
Well, Vice President Harris said that she intended to earn the nomination, and I think she's doing exactly that. I wouldn't call it a coronation. You know, there are rules that should be followed. And I can only speak as, you know, a delegate at the very bottom of the food chain here. But, you know, there are rules to follow, and we're following them. I think that if anybody felt that they would like to run for president, they would have done it during primary season and not now. And there was nobody who stepped up who felt that they were strong enough to beat Joe Biden. There were three candidates. They did not prevail. Their messages just didn't resonate with the majority of Democrats. We had that primary. 14 million people voted. And, you know, to say that the process should be opened up now, this is unprecedented. It's never happened. You know, I'm not saying not to open up a process. Open processes are always very good. But we have 104 days until Election Day. This is a proven person with a national profile. And, you know, while I respect every attempt at openness and transparency and deliberation, there are practical reasons, too. And so, you know, to them, I say, let's work on it for next time. Let's work on our process. Let's work on and make our process even more open and transparent in the future.
Do you think that this sort of enthusiasm, is that something you're happy to see now in the race that may have not been there before? And how does that help with some of the prospects moving forward?
It's always very excited to see people enthusiastic and engaged. And, you know, that's how you win elections. And so this is just like a, you know, this is another boost in the arm for people, you know, saying, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to help and do anything I can, no matter what that is. I can fold papers and stuff envelopes, whatever they're able to do. It's exciting to see people stepping up. And as we get closer to the election, that's going to increase. It always does. And it will again. And that's, you know, that's how
you know, it's really all going to come down to the people who do the volunteering, do the work, and get the voters out to vote their choice. And it's always an exciting time when that happens.
Ann Hart, who chairs the Sullivan County Democratic Committee, speaking to Tim Bruno earlier this morning. That's it for the local edition. We'll have President Biden on live tonight.